Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Denzel. It's Monday. I hope you had a better weekend than I did. I went down to Sarasota this weekend and kind of embarrassed myself. You know, it was weird. You know, the problems probably started last week. I went to play in a disc golf tournament down there, and I didn't go down there to play the course before this weekend because I had played that course many times before, although I'd not played it competitively in a tournament round since, I'm thinking, 2014, but the course really hasn't changed. And they had some extra holes down there, but the extra holes actually were pretty easy, and I played pretty well on them. But it was a weird weekend, so there were some things going on going into this past weekend that I should have been worried about. And it was really weird in that I had some really, really great shots. Shots as good as any professional is ever going. I birdied a hole two out of the three rounds, and I took a three the other round that probably only 5% of the entire field probably birdied that hole twice, and I was one of those people. But then I took an eight on a hole that I'm sure that most of the players, at least, it's a long hole, so probably fourred. I took an eight on it in the last round. And I had some wild shots, and there are still times when I get onto the pad, and when that part of my mind starts taking over, I really have no idea where the disc is going to go. It just, there's something about, and it's called the yips. You can look them up. Obviously, with disc golf not being as popular a sport as baseball or golf, there's not many articles out there about it. But you can find many articles about baseball and golf with yips. Just walk in with golf, it's mainly with putting. Just having no idea what you're going to do when you go over the ball. You get too nervous, and you have no idea where the ball is going. And in fact, Ernie Els, last year, 2016, at the Masters, on the first hole, I think he eight-putted due to the yips. Now, he managed to get it kind of under control, but in golf, ball golf, it's mainly about putting, where people get nervous, and the putter feels like it's not your hands aren't on it. It feels very disconnected from your body. And with me, when I get nervous on the disc golf course, the disc starts to feel like it's not going to come out of my hand. It feels no matter how hard I throw it, it's going to stay in my hand, which is physically impossible. But when I start doing that, I start altering things, and I start yanking everything to the left. I mean, not just 10 degrees to the left. I mean, like, 45 degrees to the left. And it's not really about my arm. It's about the rest of my body. So it's not actually an arm problem, even though I feel it in my left arm. I'm left-handed, at least when I play ball golf or disc golf. But it's my body that ends up acting the wrong way. So it's really, really strange. And when I got to that tee and I took that eight, I knew I had no idea where this disc was going to go, and it went directly left. I almost hit a truck that was parked there. So things to work out. I think that I'm going to just put the backhand to the back of the bus for a while, if I can say that. And work on my forehand. I've been meaning to do that anyway. I'm just going to start working on my forehand, throwing like a baseball throw, like sidearm baseball throw for a while. It's going to probably help my game out, and just put the backhand. I think I've become too structured with my backhand, and every player gets nervous and everything, but being that my backhand throw, I think, has gotten so mechanical that's part of it. So I'm just not going to backhand for a while. And hopefully it'll help my game. But it was an ugly weekend. I mean, I finished dead last in my division. Easily dead last. And except for the guys who chose not to finish. And but I got put on a card with some pros guys, and I stayed right with them for most of the round, and then I fell apart at the end. So I just can't keep it together the whole time. It's a bunch of things put together, and that's just the way it is. Hey, it's just disc golf. It's not like something really important, but it is embarrassing when it happens, and it really ticks me off. So there's that. That's how my weekend went down there in Sarasota. In fact, some of my friends thought I wasn't even going to show up back up for Sunday, the last round, because I played so poorly on Saturday. But I showed up and continued to embarrass myself. It's a vicious cycle. If you look up yips on YouTube, you'll find out exactly what I'm talking about, although you're not going to find anything about it regarding disc golf. The other news, and I have to tell you this. Maybe this will come as a surprise to you, but this is the last week that I will be doing this podcast. A variety of reasons. Not variety. When I say variety, I don't mean like five, but a few different reasons. One, the other show that I'm doing is starting to take up a lot of my time, and for very, very good reasons. You should know something, and I can be very honest about this. The other program that I do, you always hear me talk about mainly at the end of the program, called Unfound. It's a missing persons program. It is a podcast just like this one. And I upload this show to Podomatic after every episode, and you know that it also plays on redstatetalkradio.com. I've been doing this for about 4 or 5 years, something like that. And the highest probably this podcast has ever been ranked, and it's been recently, on Podomatic overall is like in the 700s. Now, there's many, many, many shows on that, so it's not as bad as you think. Like 700th out of probably 3,000 shows on there, different programs on there. My Unfound Missing Persons program is usually, it is peaked at like 66 out of thousands of shows. And it's usually right around number 100 out of all possible podcast shows, music and talk. And in fact, my other show, Unfound, the Missing Persons program, was just ranked in the top 10 talk shows on Podomatic.com. It's a very popular show. I enjoy doing it. We're making a lot of progress over there with me interviewing the family members of people who disappeared, and have gotten new leads on cases, and of course, I really enjoy doing it, and frankly, it is just I've had much more of an impact just in the 7-8 months that I have done that program, way more than I have done on this program. I still think that this program is very good. I think that what I'm saying on here is correct. I believe that the title of it being America's Conservative Podcast is the right title. I think that we are always conservative on here. We don't go along with trends and fads, whether it has to do with an idea or a person. But just frankly put, the other program is having an infinitely, it's, use correct English, it's infinitely more impactful than this program is. And I don't mind saying that. That's just the facts. And I'm never going to come to this microphone and lie to you, ever, whether I'm on this program or the other one. So there's that. So I have to start thinking about, well, you know, this program that I do every day, even though it's only 55 minutes, it takes up about 4 hours of my time per day. Between reading, the reading that I do, the recording of this program, and then all of the managing of it afterwards, not to mention the social media stuff I do on Twitter and elsewhere, probably takes up about 4 hours of my day, 5 days a week. So it's like 20 hours a week. It's hard to justify that when I know that I could be doing other things with my other program, which is doing a lot better. It's no different if you want to get into, what is it, not economies of scale. What is it? There's an economic term for it. But a doctor who is doing both, seeing patients and also doing the paperwork, like in you know, filling out insurance forms and being his or her own secretary as well. That's kind of what it feels like right now. That me doing both is not being beneficial to either program, frankly. Whereas that's why doctors have nurses and have secretaries and people who greet you in the lobby and everything. The doctor doesn't do everything. He does or she does what he or she is best at. And that's the way I have to I still can't think of the word. That's what I have to look at regarding this program. That 4 hours a day, what could I be doing with my other program that's already popular, even though I'm only giving it like 75% of my time? Where could it be if it was 100%? So I have to look at that. So that's why this will be the last week. I don't think I'll be getting out of politics altogether, but it's definitely not going to be something daily. The other part of it is that this, and mainly where that time, this time is going to be spent, is I'm going to be doing a true crime book this summer that is going to be focused on all the cases that I've covered on that other program so far, and I hope to have the book out in September. So the time that I've been using to do this show is going to be transferred over to putting that book together, which is going to have transcripts of interviews, maps, pictures, all of it. All of my cases put together that I think will be pretty good. And if I'm going to do that, there's just not enough time, you know, time in a week. So it continues to be a time issue combined with where I think that my efforts are best spent, frankly. So there you go. Regarding this program, and you know, I think there's probably that, you know, those are two reasons right there. I want to do this book, and I just overall need to spend more time on the show Unfound. But I think the third reason, and it's a much lesser reason, but you deserve to know it, is that, you know, frankly, my kind of conservatism is out of style right now. And I don't mean being out of style. Hey, I've been out of style my entire life. I'm not much of a group person. I've never gotten into drinking and going out. I'm not your average kind of guy that likes to go out with buddies and, you know, back in the day and pick up chicks and everything. You know, I've been in a, you know, men are a minority on this earth already. There's more women than men. And within that subset of men, I form a very, very, very small subset of that. And that, you know, I've kind of always been on my own and do things on my own. And so this kind, you know, feeling like this, mainly, I guess, since Donald Trump, maybe about the last 2 years, it doesn't make me feel alone or lonely or anything else. I wouldn't even say that I worry about it or anything. But if you listen, for example, on Red State Talk Radio, what you hear on this program is different from all of them. And I don't know how popular their programs are. I don't know if they upload to Podomatic or wherever, if they get downloads. I have no idea. And in fact, I don't even know what the statistics are for RedStateTalkRadio.com. So there's that. But what you hear on this program is obviously different, especially during the campaign season, than what you heard anywhere else. And I didn't even know that until maybe like a month or maybe a month before the election, when I got an email that was forwarded to me by the guy who runs Red State Talk Radio, a listener, trying to get me taken off the air. And that's when I found out, oh, I didn't even realize that I'm the only Never Trumper programmed on Red State Talk Radio, which is considerable because, as you know, there are many programs on there with all sorts of different hosts who are free to say anything they want when they come to the microphone. and that I was the only one. It was surprising to me. It was really, really surprising to me. But on the other hand, maybe it shouldn't have been a surprise to me. And so there's that as well. So when I look at, you know, what I've been doing and, you know, this show not progressing the way it is, it's just my kind of conservatism is out of style right now. I still believe that I'm right. I still believe that my brand of conservatism is correct. I think it's better for the world than what all of these conservative sellouts have been offering. And I think that we can see that every day with the guy who they supported, they sold out for, who is now president. There's no doubt in my mind about that. But I guess I just haven't done as – I haven't been as convincing. I think I've been as convincing as possible. It's just that that's just not where the American people are right now. That's not where Republicans are. It's not where a lot of conservatives are. You look at a couple polls recently, high 90 percentage of people would still vote for Donald Trump again, despite what has gone on these first 4 months. You know, so I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily, you know, giving up. It's just that maybe to use an Ayn Rand type of idea, I'm just going to John Galt for a while. You know, John Galt, you know, said, you know what, if this is the way I'm going to have to work and everything else, then I'm just going to totally get the heck out. Not going to use my brains and talents. I'm just going to be a regular person. If you don't see it, then I'm just going to go Galt and disappear for a while. And like in the book Atlas Shrugged, these prime movers, these people of industry who the government came after and they vanished, which is a great I have to commend her for that theme in that book. They just were going to sit back and let the world destroy itself and kind of pick up afterwards. I have to admit that there is a part of me that kind of feels like that right now. And actually, it's I've probably, you know, I felt like that for a little while. That, you know, sometimes, you know, this is what people voted for. So they deserve to get it good and hard. You deserve it. And that sounds like arrogance, whatever it is. But I still believe that I'm right, both, you know, metaphorically and one of the definitions of it. I'm to the right side of issues, and I believe that I'm correct. But you can't force it upon people. And I think that we've become a desperate country, and so we've, too many of us who are good people, not me personally, but selected the wrong guy. And I would say that for liberals as well. I think that their embracing of Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders and all that, it's not doing them any favors either. And nobody can see it on either side because each side is so desperate for power, so desperate for this, so desperate for that, telling their constituencies that it's the end of the world. You know, illegals are going to take over the United States. You know, that's what Republicans believe now. On the other side, you know, businessmen and corporate interests are going to take over. Neither are true. Neither. But fear is the tool these days. And that's why when it came to Hillary Clinton, why did people vote for Donald Trump? Because they were afraid of Hillary Clinton. I'm not afraid of her. And so I think that's why I made the decision that I did regarding Hillary Clinton. I'm not afraid of her. I'm afraid of liberalism. But Donald Trump wasn't offering non-liberalism. You convinced yourselves that he was. I think it's now obvious that he wasn't. So I don't live in fear of this stuff. Because when you fear and just, you know, you know, with my disc golf, you know, that I just explained. The truth is, when I stepped up to the tee this weekend, I was having a lot of fear. And what happens when you fear things, you make bad decisions. And with me, my bad decision is my body not doing the right thing and my discs flying all over the place. If I didn't fear it, and it's something I have to work on, I would play a lot better. And I think for all of you, if you didn't fear Hillary Clinton or didn't fear liberalism or anything, and just know, you know what, I just know who I am, we would have made better decisions on both sides in 2016. Both sides. I'm not sure a conservative would have won. I'm not sure a liberal or a Democrat. I don't know what would happen, but fear and fear-mongering are what is driving everything. And I would hope on this program that it was not, this show was not based on fear. It was just stating the facts, what's constitutional, what's unconstitutional, my beliefs in how entitlements shouldn't exist, and, you know, all of it. Yes, I do believe you can't do this forever. I guess that's a form of fear. But I also said, you know what? It's not going to happen today. It's not going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to happen next week. It's not going to happen this year. But it will eventually happen. It will, that you'll figure out we can't do this forever. And there's still chances to turn it around. The problem is that nobody has enough courage. Courage is the opposite of fear. Nobody has enough courage to talk to the American people bluntly. In addition, the American people don't have enough courage to accept that as the truth. So there's a lot of blame to go around. And I just have not been successful enough, you know, my part in this, in changing enough minds. Did what I could in the campaign season to try to get people to not vote for Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. And what happened? The two major parties got more votes than they ever have together in American history. So there's that. But I'm never going to stop being conservative. But this will give me the time while I'm working on my other things with Unfound. Give me a chance to really think about what I want to do to, because the reason I did this, do this show is because I believe that you have to put up the good fight. I don't like liberalism. I think it's wrong. I don't necessarily fear it. But I always thought I was doing this program because good people need to stand up against evil things. You know, something can be evil, and that does, just because something is evil doesn't mean you have to fear it. And I think that that is what has happened. That there are a lot of people who hate liberalism, but then turn it into also a kind of fear. We are afraid if Hillary Clinton becomes president. We are afraid if the Supreme Court gets another liberal justice. We are afraid of this. We are afraid of that. Whereas this country has been through a lot worse than what we're going through right now. A lot worse. Had a Revolutionary War. We had a Civil War. We had, you know, hundreds of thousands of men died, mostly men, in the wars that we fought. We've had a Depression. There's so many things that are worse than Hillary Clinton and one more Supreme Court justice or anything like that, that the fear and everything that was stated was complete BS. That's why on this program I always have said, you just don't fear anything, just do the right thing. Just do the moral thing. And I don't think that morally you could support the idea of voting for Donald Trump. It was, I guess, the best I could say about it, well, it was the lesser of two immoral things to do. That's the best I could ever say about it. Ever. Still very poor decision on about 63 million Americans. And poor decision on, for the Democrats, about 66 million Americans. And it's disgusting, but that's where we are. And, you know, I have to admit that, you know, being an Iron Maiden fan, that for me personally, when I hear Caught Somewhere in Time, it's a, you know, that's kind of, you know, a Stranger in a Strange Land. That's how I've been feeling. That, and I get the idea, I have to tell you, that it seemed to change very quickly for me. And I, you know, the first time, I don't know the first time that I said this, but I've said it a few times, but with probably within the last year, is that I thought of that scene in one of my favorite movies, Breaking Away, where the leader, lead character, Mike, you know, these things go wrong with him to the point where he's racing alongside his idols and they sabotage his bike and he goes, riding off into a ditch, flying off into a ditch, and he comes home. And, you know, his parents could tell he's really distraught and everything else. What happened? He goes, you know, everybody lies. I just didn't know. And that's the way I've felt about my fellow conservatives for a long time now, probably going on almost 2 years. I didn't realize how many of you were lying. I think that you're good people. I think that you are good mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and children, and you send your mother flowers on Mother's Day and you surprise her, go home, and it's surprise. I'm sure you do all of that. I just never understood how deeply you were lying to me about your political inclinations. And unfortunately, I think for conservatism, it's become kind of a checkbox. You know, there's certain things, if I'm doing this, I must be conservative. And, you know, if I own a gun and I support Second Amendment rights and I'm pro-life and I do the, that makes me conservative. And that's not really how it works. Conservatism is not about issues. It's not about, it's expressed in political issues. It's expressed in political issues. But it's something, I think, that is deeper than that. And I think part of it is being honest. Whereas I think liberalism is something that is anchored in dishonesty. And I just don't know if you people have been honest with me, those of you who have gone the opposite direction of myself, who still call yourselves conservatives. I don't know if you've been honest with me over the years, a type of conservative like me, and whether you're really truly being honest with yourselves. And of course, the tough part about human nature is, man, we can deny things forever. And I don't know, I hope that at some point, many conservatives who voted in 2016 will, in their own way, come to the realization what they did was wrong. I hope. Because, you know, this is one of those things, can't continue. If conservatives are going to continue to vote for people, both men and women, like Donald Trump, then yes, there isn't a lot of hope left. And it, once again, it doesn't mean the world's going to end tomorrow or next year or 10 years from now or in my lifetime. If I live to be, let's say I get to 80 years old, eventually, though, it just can't continue. Or as the old saying goes, the things that can't continue won't. That's not to put fear into any of you. It's just there's plenty of time to change it. But the only reason people usually change their behavior is because they suddenly realize that it's wrong. And I don't know if this, you know, this was an election that cut deep. cut deep. And I don't know if, you know, if we were a human body, you realize there's a fine line being getting cut and your body being able to heal itself and getting cut and you needing stitches. And this is a cut that I think needs stitches. And just nobody's been able to sew it up yet. I got to go to the break. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism. WRS Digital. Red State Talk Radio.
And we are back at America's Conservative Podcast. So enough about me. Enough about where what's going on with this show. It's going to be its last week. And like I said, I don't think I'm going to leave politics forever. But I'll probably be back. But it has to fit into my schedule of other things that I do. That's just the way it is that are going very well so far. And I can tell you, just want you to know, there is this other show that I've done and found is probably the most rewarding thing I've ever done in my life. Being able to talk to these people, try to help them, get to know them. Be somebody that they can lean on. They can call me anytime. You know, been on the show, haven't been on the show, just to talk. Just easily the most rewarding thing that I've done. Maybe you should check it out. Let's move on to some actual political stuff before this 55 minutes ends. I was reading this, I guess, on Bill Maher's show. They were doing a hypothetical of what would have happened if Bernie Sanders won the nomination and had run against Donald Trump. And I guess Bill Maher and Cornel West, both of them being kooks, came to the conclusion that had Bernie Sanders won the nomination on the Democrat side, he would have beaten Donald Trump. And their reasoning is that Bernie Sanders would have been able to keep some of those Barack Obama voters, particularly white, rural Obama voters on the Democrat side, and that would have hurt Trump's chances of winning Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, which are accepted as being the states that really spelled doom for Hillary Clinton's election. Those three states put together, three states that nobody could see Trump winning, that he won, and Bernie Sanders would have done better there. This is interesting to me because just last week, Joe Biden was out there saying how had he gotten the nomination, had he even run and gotten the nomination, that he would have been a great candidate and Hillary Clinton was not a great candidate. And so he's thinking he would have won. I think that he can make Joe Biden can make that argument. I think that Bill Maher and Cornel West are wrong here. Now, it's alternative history. We don't know. Hey, maybe Bernie Sanders will run in 2020 and we'll get to see this play out against Donald Trump. If Donald Trump can remain president for his entire term. Oh, come on. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge. I don't think that Bernie Sanders would have beaten Donald Trump. I think that the Bernie Sanders would have had a whole different share kind of problems that Hillary Clinton didn't. With Hillary Clinton, you're looking at it. I think they're looking at it. Look, that, you know, he doesn't have the baggage that she does. She didn't have the email controversy and all of this. And so because of that, Bernie Sanders would have been a better candidate. On the other hand, Bernie Sanders would have had a whole different set of problems. First of all, I don't know really how many Clinton supporters would have shown up to vote for him. It would have been most of them, but not all of them. Secondly, socialism is you know, it's a funny thing. And on one hand, people don't believe it in theory, but they love it in practice. And that's what would hurt Bernie Sanders. That if he was demonized enough as embracing socialist ideas, I think that would have been enough, because socialism is still not viewed as a kind word. Once again, people don't like their money being taken away, but once it comes to, you know, Social Security and Medicare and all of this stuff, people keep voting for it. People keep loving it. That's all entitlements are, is socialism. That's all it is. Taking from young people to give it to old people. Taking from rich people and giving it to poor people. All over, back and forth, back and forth. And that's the major job that the United States federal government does today. So I think Donald Trump and his minions would have gone pretty hard at Bernie Sanders about him being a socialist. I also think there's something else that's forgotten that I, of course, brought up. And that was Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, to my knowledge, don't have a long track record together. I don't know if they were ever friends at one time. I don't know if they've ever gone to any parties. I don't think Bernie Sanders went to any of Donald Trump's weddings. I don't think Donald Trump went to Bernie Sanders' wedding. And that, I think, would have allowed Donald Trump and his people to go much harder at Bernie Sanders than they went against Hillary Clinton. As much as everybody seems to think that Donald Trump went hard at Hillary Clinton, I still don't believe that. I still believe that Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton agree on about 80% of topics in the United States. And they have a history, and they both know where bodies are buried in each of their pasts that they don't want to talk about. And for all of you Hillary Clinton supporters, I frankly think that hurt her. I think it did. So, you know, and I still to this day can't figure out why in one of these debates, while Donald Trump was attacking her to the extent that he did, she just didn't come up and say, Donald, you were a Democrat until just a couple years ago. You gave me tons of money, to my foundation, to my campaigns, to my husband's campaign for president. You gave tons of money to us. When exactly did you start thinking that I was crooked? When did you start believing that? Because Republicans have been talking about me like this in this campaign for years and years and years. And you still gave, you must think I'm a pretty good person. What has changed? She never did that. I think that she had been able to do that, it would have been a very good message. Why she didn't do that, I don't know. But I think that it really would have resonated. That is something that, of course, in a Bernie Sanders versus Donald Trump's election, that wouldn't have been able to happen. And I think that Donald Trump probably would have had more success arguing against Bernie Sanders than he did against Hillary Clinton. And so I reject this idea that Bernie Sanders necessarily would have won. Hey, who knows? Given that Donald Trump seemed to come out of nowhere and win, maybe Bernie Sanders would have done the same against Donald Trump. Possible. But I don't think it's as clear-cut as these guys tried to portray it. And I just watched – I don't watch Bill Maher's show, but I did watch a video of this part of it. As clear-cut as they think. I don't believe that. So, you know, not – even to mention that it seems that the Democrat Party has something against old white guys. But, you know, and Joe Biden, though, on the other hand, he was Barack Obama's vice president. So I think that he would have gotten a pass. You know, and in fact, Joe Biden probably is kind of like the average of Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. He is without the scandals that Hillary had, but without the socialism that Bernie Sanders has. He would have been the best of both worlds, probably, and it's still a puzzler why he didn't run. And that's why I continue to think had he run, he would have won. Hillary Clinton is, being that I think we had the two worst candidates ever to run for president. Hillary Clinton, of course, losing to Donald Trump makes her the worst president candidate of all time. I think that Bernie Sanders would have lost to Donald Trump probably even worse, which would have made Bernie Sanders the worst presidential candidate of all time. So both Hillary and Bernie would lose. Hillary did lose to Donald Trump. And so he's third to worst. Donald Trump is in presidential candidates. And we're not going by electoral votes won or popular vote. We know we could go back to, of course, if we're going to use that criteria, we could, Walter Mondale would be the worst in him getting blown out in 1984. And then there was the, of course, the blowout of Barry Goldwater in 1964, or Richard Nixon winning re-election in 1972. There have been plenty of blowouts in presidential American history. American presidential history. But as far as lying, crooked, bad people, 2016 took the cake. Took the cake, where you could say that Donald Trump running in any other year would have lost. Hillary Clinton running in probably maybe any other year would have won. You know, she would have lost as well. I just can't think that either of them winning against any of the other party. Donald Trump against Michael Dukakis, I think Michael Dukakis wins. Hillary Clinton against maybe George W. Bush in 2004 loses. You know, she gets blown out, I think, all over the place. So just two horrible candidates. So I don't agree with Bill Maher and Cornel West's assertion that Bernie Sanders would have won either. Let's move on to something else. Mike Pence, he had students walk out on him at the Notre Dame graduation this weekend. You should know that he also spoke at my alma mater, Grove City College, this weekend. I think that he did Grove City on Saturday and Notre Dame on Sunday. The guy was busy. I wonder if he had two different speeches. That's interesting. I'm going to have to look that up. Or did he just recant, like a stand-up comedian goes from one city to the next telling the same jokes? I wonder if Mike Pence did that. I don't know. But at Notre Dame on Sunday, they walked out. But at Grove City, if you'll remember going back to some time in April, I was talking about this, there was some controversy about Mike Pence speaking there. And some Grove City students, of which I used to be one, were concerned that Grove City was more worried about being close to politics than closer to God. And I'm not, you're not, I mean, you may once in a while, I mean, show's going to be ending in a few days, but you've heard me talk about my alma mater, Grove City, when it's come up. I have a very conflicted view of that school. I think in retrospect that going back to high school that I shouldn't have gone there. My personality, and now really knowing who I am at 46 years old, I should have gone to Pitt, even though it would have been way, way more expensive and all of that. I think I would have enjoyed my college experience much more going to Pitt, someplace like that, not to Penn State, but to Pitt, than to Grove City. I am not the kind of guy who needs that kind of guardrails in his life. I think that what I found in going to Grove City is that students went there for a couple different reasons. One, they came from very religious families, so I ran to a lot of very religious, even though it's technically not, it's affiliated with what, the Presbyterian Church of the United States, something like that. But I wouldn't say it's an overtly religious school, but you had a lot of very religious kids going there who were sent there by their parents. Where I was raised Catholic, and I would not say that I was a very good Catholic, and I don't even know how good of a Christian I am these days, although I believe in God and Jesus Christ. So that didn't work for me. But also other kids went there because to stay away from that kind of atmosphere, there was going to be drinking and partying and everything else, whereas I've never been into that anyway. So there was that. And I would have ended up conservative one way or the other. I was already conservative before I went to Grove City. And frankly, I just ran into a lot of kooky people at Grove City, just to be honest with you. Just complete kooky. Kooky kind of kids. More kooky kids there than I have met anywhere else. Even though I learned a lot of good things there. And I think I told you that, I mean, we had kids who were protesting Halloween while I went there. Because they, you know, saying that it's a satanic holiday. Yes, really. So, Mike Pence talking there and being protested at least a little bit. I guess there were people out. People would come over from Slippery Rock, which is the other school that's right down the road, 7 miles away. That's just coincidentally where my dad went to school. Came over and were protesting, and you know, the motorcade comes through town and everybody's protesting. I don't think any students walked out, though. I don't think so. Maybe some students maybe chose not to go. That could be. But it was nothing like at Grove City what happened at Notre Dame with scores of graduates leaving. I don't know. I think that's rude, too. If you're, you know, it's, you get the idea when people do that, that it's all about them. They want to show people how rebellious they are. Well, if you don't like who's speaking, don't show up. Oh, I see you wanted to make a point. Well, it's all about you. I get you wanted to make a point. Okay. You wanted to drag attention away from the vice president. I get it. You know, I could tell you, of course, Grove City would never have invited. I mean, by the time I graduated, Bill Clinton was president. He had just become president before I graduated. And, you know, if the speaker was going to be Al Gore, because he would have been vice president then, I just wouldn't have shown up. No matter what kind of school I went to. I wouldn't have gotten there and then got up, you know, as soon as the guy started speaking. That's me. And it's also a difference between conservatives and liberals. At least I hope it is. I continue to say that I'm not sure where conservatives are in their thought system, their behavior system right now. They seem to be under a spell of some type that is, I think, brought on by fear. So Mike Pence gets protested at, you know, it's not even Donald Trump. That's the other part of this. That Mike Pence isn't even Donald Trump. What would have happened if Donald Trump would have, I mean, we know he spoke at the Coast Guard Academy and everybody clapped him. I don't like that either. That's a fairly safe audience for him, though. I mean, Mike Pence is not Donald Trump. I think the country would be better off if Mike Pence were president, although I'm not a big fan of him either. So what would they have done at Notre Dame at Donald Trump? Maybe nobody would have showed up. I don't know. Everybody would have got up and left. I don't know. These are wacky, wicked times that we live in. And maybe one more thing before I leave you for today. There's an article about cost-sharing subsidies, and I just was, before I got on, I saw that the Trump administration wants to extend the deadline by 90 days regarding these cost-sharing subsidies and what's going to happen with them. Donald Trump allegedly wants to end these cost-sharing subsidies that insurance companies are getting for signing up all of these people with previous conditions. What are they called? I forget. pre-existing conditions. There you go. And he wants to get rid of them. And he was trying to, I think what he was trying to do, and this is just how badly he miscalculates things. He was thinking that if he could convince Democrats that he wants to get rid of these cost-sharing subsidies and these premiums are going to go up, and my premiums, your premiums, everybody's premiums, cost is going to go up because these subsidies are going away, that he somehow convinced himself that he would be able to put the blame on it on the Democrats. That's not how it works. And, you know, the more you hear out of this administration and out of Donald Trump's mouth, you wonder how he could have ever sold a book that sold millions of copies called Art of the Deal. You just got to wonder. You just got to wonder. That he thought that he could blackmail these Democrats by saying, well, hey, if you don't go along with this, these costs, and we're going to be able to put the blame on them. This is exactly what Democrats want to happen. This is also the reason that you have to get rid of Obamacare, all of it, at the same time. All of it. Because when you try to do it piecemeal, like the House wants to do in part one, part two, part three, and as Ted Cruz points out, the best parts don't get to part three, and we may not even get there. This is just going to give Democrats further chances to demonize the whole process. That it's like, if you want to use a healthcare analogy, it's like taking the Band-Aid off. Just take it off already. Just take it off. Just rip it. Go. Please. Do it. That's what needs to be done with Obamacare. You pull it a little bit, you're going to hear a lot of screaming. Pain that doesn't need to be inflicted. And it's just going to last longer. Democrats want that pain because they think they're going to be able to turn that into getting a system that is even more government controlled. And you know what? I can't argue with them. Because as soon as this stuff pops up, what Donald Trump doesn't understand, or whether he understands it, doesn't understand it, has no economic sense whatsoever, is that as soon as those subs, and I don't want these subsidies, I want everything gone. Not just the subsidies, I want everything gone. All of it. He doesn't understand, as soon as these subsidies go away, the costs will go up. People will, what are people going to say? People don't, even all of you people who call yourselves conservatives out there, they don't automatically start saying, we need the free market to get involved. As soon as they see their costs going up again, what do they say? We need government to get involved in this. That only helps Democrats. Whereas if the simple statement is this from Donald Trump or whoever else, government is getting out of the business of healthcare, period. Period. P-E-R-I-O-D, period. We're getting out of it. Don't come belling to aching to us about passing a law to bring down your premiums. Don't do it. We're getting out of it. That's what needs to be done, because as long as you try to do this little bit, and people feel that lasting pain day after day after day after day, and they know that government is still involved in healthcare, they're always going to expect for government to fix it. Or as you say, we're getting rid of Obamacare and government is getting out of the healthcare business, period. And you just keep beating that into people's heads. That's what has to be done. Donald Trump, other people trying to do it some other way. Donald Trump, I know, doesn't understand this. He doesn't understand that costs going up, everything is a boom for Democrats. Hey, but you guys elected him. I gotta go. I'm just gonna leave it at that. Go to the website if you'd like, edwarddensel.com. It's still gonna exist in one way or the other. And just tell you about a little bit about my other program that I'm gonna be devoting so much time to. It comes out every Friday. I have an interview every Friday with a family member who has lost a loved one to a disappearance. I've become very close to these people. And it comes out every Friday. You can find it on Podomatic and iTunes. I gotta go. Thanks for listening to America's Conservative Podcast.